First up to our near neighbour, Indonesia. And it's nearly a full year, you know, since Indonesian President Joko Widodo came to power. It's proved a very interesting time indeed. Many foreign policy analysts, including the Australian's journalist Greg Sheridan, claim that Joko's presidency is, quote, a desperate mess, he wrote in July, and Indonesia is on the brink of a major economic meltdown. Others are more optimistic. Certainly there was a significant cabinet reshuffle recently that brought new talent into the ministry and a series of new economic reforms into play that may yet steer the country and the president to higher ground. To assess the economy and Jokowi's first 12 months, I'm joined now by Hal Hill, Professor of Southeast Asian Economics with the Crawford School of Public Policy and the Indonesia Project at the ANU in Canberra that's just held its influential twice-yearly Indonesia update. He's also just back from there, so it's a pleasure to welcome him. Good morning, Hal.
Yes, good morning, Geraldine. Thank you.
This question of the slower-than-expected economic growth in Indonesia, now under 5%, Hal, when it was consistently above 6% for the last decade, what's your reading of that?
Well, it's driven by two factors, Geraldine. One is there are a lot of pretty tough global headwinds which are really affecting Indonesia. In some ways, not unlike Australia, Indonesia's been through this massive commodity boom decade and is now adjusting, but the political narrative and the public expectations haven't yet adjusted. And secondly, Jokowi, it's fair to say, hasn't lived up to expectations. The expectations of him were probably too high in the first place, but the transition from running a city to running a country has proved very difficult for him.
And the broader context of Indonesia as an emerging economy, very much dependent upon China too, as we are, how does that play into all of this? I mean, are they still emerging in the way we thought they would?
Well, yes. And so every time China gets the wobbles, Indonesia really, really gets affected. So just in the past month, the fact that China growth rate looks like it's slowing more than we thought has really cast a bit of gloom over Indonesia. And because there's so much liquidity in the global economy, every time there's any bad news, capital tends to leave these emerging economies like Indonesia. So Indonesia's had a pretty serious problem in the past month with capital flight out of the country.
Yes, there was big turmoil on their stock exchange and on August the 24th, and it seemed, and then there was a lot of jitters. And I suppose don't you think looking on emerging economies like Indonesia, even if they are on the cusp of great change, they don't need big shocks. They don't handle the big shocks necessarily terribly well, do they?
That's right. Although, of course, Indonesia had learned a lot from the Asian financial crisis of the late 1990s, so it's much better prepared than it was at the last time that a really nasty shock came along. But it is still the case that it's going through a difficult period, and it's also going through a difficult period because Jokowi, as president, hasn't really set out a clear way forward. He makes speeches from time to time extolling the virtues of globalization, and then in the same week he'll say, "Well, we've got to be very worried about it, or even suspicious of globalization." So there's not really a clear narrative coming out of the government.
Now, this big drop in the value of the rupiah and the wobbly corporate sector and the very significant rise in inflation too, which I didn't realise until I was preparing for this, how would you assess the confidence of the people whom you'd be wanting to invest there?
I think you'd have to tell them to think beyond the headlines of the past week and the next week and think longer term. I mean, this is a country which, after all, is the fourth largest in the world. It's destined on some projections to be the fourth largest economy in the world. So you've got to think, I think, beyond the short term. But in the short term, I think it's still going to be two steps forward and one and a half steps back. So there was a major cabinet cabinet reshuffle, as you mentioned, which was a big improvement on the early cabinet, and they've started to issue these reform packages. Now, we don't yet know what they're going to be like in substance, but at least they're a start, and they're sending a signal that Jacoby is now serious about the economy.
Yes, I mean, I read that they're good on announcements, not necessarily great on implementation. So what is the essence of this reform package?
Well, it's really trying to undo a lot of the damage which was done in the last few years. Indonesia, since around about 2008-2009, has had a pretty serious episode of rising economic nationalism. So it's turned inward. It's become much more restrictive towards foreign investment, quite a few trade barriers imposed, also in the labour market. And so it's the people now running the economy are trying to undo a lot of that damage. And it's in the context, of course, as I say, of these global headwinds making things a bit more difficult. But it's possible that the external challenges are going to actually spur the government on to do these reforms. I mean, that's been the story of Indonesia. It tends to reform when the external environment is tough.
Right, interesting. A couple of quirky things I noticed. Well, not quirky, but interesting. For instance, Widodo wants to create a domestic smartphone industry, I gather, and he's announcing these minimum local content levels that people who are sort of co-investing, like the Chinese, have to now abide by. And there was this universal health insurance scheme passed recently, which is also seen to be something really quite significant.
Well, they're both important initiatives. So the smartphone idea is, of course, a really good one. It means Jokowi employed that as mayor of Solo and governor of Jakarta. And that actually means that the bureaucracy, which is still such a challenge and there's still a lot of corruption, both small and large in it, can be bypassed by these kind of initiatives. But he has mixed up that very important initiative with saying that you've got to produce the products at home. So you want the first, but you don't necessarily want the second. On the health card, well, this is one of Jokowi's signature policies, and in principle, it's a really good idea. Indonesia still lags on its health indicators. It spends very little on health, and so this was a campaign slogan which really resonated with the public. So this is another case where you've got a great policy, and we'll have to see how the implementation goes. At this stage, it was interesting. I was actually talking to a friend in Yogyakarta last week. The public hospitals are now being flooded with people who've got access, and so the problem really is the fact that they haven't got the resources to be able to meet this sudden surge in demand, and they need to invest big time to develop, you know, the supply of hospitals and doctors and nurses and so on.
Does that offer Australia any way in to be useful, or are we sort of a bit persona non grata at the moment?
No, we're not persona non grata. In fact, for what it's worth, the Indonesian media commented rather favourably on the change of our political leadership.
Did they?
Yes. It was. I was surprised actually. I was actually there just after the turnover. No, we're not persona non grata. We've got work to do. I think we're tending to ignore Indonesia too much and see it in terms of a series of particular incidents to be managed rather than a broader relationship to be developed. But there's a lot of potential. And it's the fact that Indonesia is moving into this middle-class economy with lots of new services being demanded, and that's where we've got the potential to play a very important role.
And finally, what about Jokowi's political momentum? It was having a lot of difficulties with Megawati continuing to pull the strings a bit behind the scenes. Her daughter is in cabinet. I don't know how that's all working out.
Well, I think it's not unfair to say that his daughter has not been the highest performer.
Her daughter.
Yes, her daughter. Yeah. So this is going to be a continuing tussle, I think, where Mega, the former president Megawati Sukarno Putri, really wants to have some control, and Jokowi has to kind of play a sort of balancing act. I guess the good news for him is that he now has a majority in the parliament, the DPR, and that's going to make the passage of bills a bit easier. But it's going to be a rainbow coalition, very unwieldy coalition. And so he, although he's president, his power is severely constrained.
Yes, somebody said if you look at Obama and you think he's got difficulties passing legislation, just feel for Jokowi. Hal Hill, thank you very much indeed.
Good, Geraldine. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Hal Hill, Professor of Southeast Asian Economics at the Crawford School of Public Policy and Head of the Indonesia Project there. And your thoughts, if you visit regularly and you'd love to let us know some things, we'd love to hear from you. So just go to our website to see how you can leave your thoughts.